Hi, my name's Billy Bragg, and you're listening to Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business life.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 21st of July, 2017. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we're broadcasting live from the Sheffield Live radio studio in the showroom workstation building in the centre of Sheffield. This show's going out on FM radio, 93.2 FM, and through our internet live stream. It'll also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. And talking about podcasts, we weren't on air last Friday, but the Friday before we were, and we had grumpy, stoic northerner Rob Drummond on the programme. Yes, that's how he describes himself. That's not me insulting Rob. However, he seemed to be pretty cheerful when he was with us, and he talked all about using the power of storytelling in your marketing, plus loads of expertise about choosing and using marketing automation and CRM systems. That was a really interesting interview with Rob from 2 weeks ago, and you can catch that on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. Just go to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows, look up Business Live, and you'll be able to find that show from 2 weeks ago. Once you're there, you can discover a whole wealth of exciting music and much, much more. But what's on our programme today? Well, I'm really, really pleased to have in the studio with me Tom Sutton, who's the Head of Corporate Partnerships and Membership, and Sam Christmas, the Events Manager from the Sheffield Chamber. I'll be talking about a forthcoming event, Connect Sheffield. Sounds really, really exciting to me. You'll find out more in just a few minutes. Also on the programme today, professional musician Alison Smith. She was giving a concert in Sheffield last week. And yesterday I recorded an interview with Alison about making a career as a professional musician. I thought this would be pretty timely. It's Tramlines this weekend. And if you're interested in the business of music, then Alison's got lots to say that will, well, firstly, it's interesting. Secondly, it's informative for any musicians wanting a career in the music industry. So that's coming up as well too today. Before we turn to those, quick reminder, I mentioned it's Tramlines this weekend. Sheffield Live will be broadcasting from Tramlines, live broadcasting from the Folk Forest, the wonderful Folk Forest in Encliffe Park. And the station will be broadcasting live from 1 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. So tune in to us to catch lots of great Tramlines coverage over the weekend and enjoy the event. I'm sure the weather's going to be absolutely wonderful. Ever the optimist. What's been going on in business and in social enterprise? Well, Yorkshire bucks the national trend for consumer confidence, because consumer confidence has risen across Yorkshire during the second quarter of 2017, according to new data that was published this week, which bucks a national trend that saw confidence experience a big dip in over 2 years for many parts of the rest of the UK. But in Yorkshire, there was a slight improvement. According to professional services firm Deloitte, their consumer tracker report found that in Yorkshire, confidence rose from minus 13% to minus 12%. Still place the region below the national average, but the survey of consumers found that confidence is not falling in the same way as it is in other parts of the UK. So potentially good news there. What else is going on? Well, the cooperative sector is worth £36 billion across the UK, according to a new report published this week from Cooperatives UK. The sector had a turnover of £36 billion and employed around 226,000 members of staff in 2016. There are around 7,000 co-ops in the UK. Total membership of those is £13.6 million. And apparently, 700,000 new members join co-ops, such as retail co-ops, farming cooperatives, community-owned businesses and credit unions in 2016 alone. Now, talking community-owned businesses, we had the Angler's Rest on the programme a few weeks ago, talking about saving a pub in Bamford, just outside of Sheffield, and how, thanks to it now being community-owned, it's injecting £250,000 into the local economy through its supply chain. So loads going on there. What else is happening? Well, according to a report that I was involved with that was published last week, a report by PwC, professional services firm, and the Crowdfunding Centre, the Worldwide Data Observatory of Crowdfunding, women hit their crowdfunding targets more often than men across every geographical part of the world and every sector, from tech to publishing to film to much, much, much more. So the Crowdfunding Centre and PwC's joint report, which is called Unleashing Female Entrepreneurial Potential, compares the experience of women using seed crowdfunding to the more traditional finance raising routes. Now, as I've mentioned, I was one of the two lead authors of the report, so I have an interest in this. But the report has been published by PwC and has been picked up by media all over the world. And it shows that while more men use seed crowdfunding than women, women are more successful in reaching their crowdfunding targets than men. And female-led businesses and entrepreneurs have long faced barriers in accessing finance. There's still extensive evidence of this, which is flagged up in the report. But thanks to crowdfunding, entrepreneurs can now access markets directly, and this is making a huge difference. So worldwide data snapshot, 22% of crowdfunding campaigns led by women reach their targets. 17% of crowdfunding campaigns led by men reach their targets. So really interesting, and the report's been published on the PwC website. You can find out more at pwc.com/womenunbound. Sheffield Chamber has put out a comment on the HS2 announcement. The announcement was made this week, finalising the route for HS2 through the Sheffield City region. And Richard Wright, who's the Executive Director of the Sheffield Chamber of Commerce, said the Chamber welcomes the announcement by the Minister that finalises the route for HS2 through the Sheffield City region. Richard added that this has been a difficult and prolonged decision-making process, but we believe that we've reached a solution that gives a good and balanced economic return for the whole region. He commented also, now is the time to put the decision making behind us and get on to make sure we maximise those benefits. And Mr. Wright also said that to get the best return for the region, we must ensure everyone has good connectivity to the new station, HS2 is properly integrated, and that the target includes a regular 30-minute journey times between Leeds, Manchester and Sheffield. He also said the prize is enormous and something worth fighting for. So we're always interested in hearing your views, whether you want to comment on HS2, whether you want to comment on the rise in cooperative businesses, whether you want to comment on something else going on in business or in social enterprise. You can get in touch. Email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text to 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veach, on Twitter. You can find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And whether you're starting or running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer or an employee or self-employed, we're always keen to hear from you. Put yourself forward, suggest a topic we should cover. Come and be on the show. We'd welcome your involvement. So, someone who got in touch with us to talk about a really exciting forthcoming event, Connect Sheffield, is Sam Christmas. And Sam's in the studio with me now, on also joined by Tom Sutton. Sam's the events manager at Sheffield Chamber. Tom, head of corporate partnerships and membership at the Chamber. Sam, Tom, thanks very much for coming in today. Good morning.
Good morning. Morning, Jamie. Yeah, thanks for having us and inviting us to your show.
Great to see you here. So you've come on to tell me about a forthcoming event. It's coming up in October. Connect Sheffield sounds really exciting. What's it all about?
Connect Sheffield is a one-day business conference and exhibition being held at Ponds Forge on Wednesday the 18th of October. The objective of Connect Sheffield is, well, exactly what it says on the tin, basically, connect. It's about connecting Sheffield businesses and businesses from the wider city region, bringing them together for one day under one roof in order for them to network, share best practice, showcase their products and services, build relationships with other businesses and hear from informative and inspiring speakers.
Great. Okay. So bringing people together, informative, inspiring speakers. You're going to have quite a few exhibitors, and your aspiration is for a lot of delegates to be there. What are the sort of numbers looking like?
Okay, so if I can put it into perspective for you, we are hoping to attract around 130 exhibitors.
Yeah.
That's what we'll be installing into the International Hall, 130 exhibition pods.
Yes.
And we're hoping for as close to 1,000 business delegates attending on the day as possible. Where we're at the moment, we've already secured 50 exhibition stands, so we're already nearly halfway there.
Great stuff.
Close to 200 delegates are attending already as well. So to say we only launched the event 2 weeks ago, it's been a really, really promising start. And I think that that's evidence that there is need and want for this sort of event within the business community.
It sounds like there is. That's good news. So you're off to a flying start. Fantastic. And you've got some high-profile partners as well involved with the event, I noticed, on the website.
Yeah, so just like to say a big thank you to the partners and the other event organisers that are helping the Chamber with this event. So that will be SIV, Sheffield International Venues. A big thank you to them. Yeah. And our corporate partners, City Fibre, Sheffield Hallam University, and Gripple.
Great. So high-profile partners there getting involved. Now, coming along as a delegate to attend the event on the day, it's free to attend, I understand.
Yep. It is, yeah, correct. It's absolutely free to attend for business delegates. We're hoping that will encourage good footfall to the event through the day. Delegate passes are completely free, and they're available on the Chamber website and on the Connect Sheffield website.
But people will need to register, presumably, for those passes.
They do, yeah. Yes, Jeremy.
Yeah. And people come along, they'll get to meet each other, meet other businesses, and hear from some really interesting speakers as well. You've already got a number of speakers secured and involved. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what will be covered?
Well, we're currently working on the conference agenda.
Yeah.
We have approached a mixture of potential speakers, both locally and nationally. We're keen to have a mixture of men and women speakers throughout the day.
Yeah.
We are still awaiting confirmation from, as you say, a couple of private sector and public sector people. Some senior ministers have also been contacted, and we're waiting on decisions from them. I am pleased to confirm the speakers that we already have confirmed are Dr. Adam Marshall, who's the Director General from the British Chambers, will be coming up from London.
Yeah.
We've got both Vice Chancellors from Sheffield Hallam University and University of Sheffield, respectively. And Alexis Cratchai, who's the Managing Director of Counter Context, a communications company from the city.
Yes.
Various topics will be discussed on the day, and some of which still need to be firmed up just due to, obviously, we want the event to be as up to date as possible. Therefore, we don't want to secure the event agenda, the conference agenda, too early.
Yeah.
But there are some obvious ones. Brexit will obviously be a key issue. International trade, the visitor economy, the outdoor city, the city brand. I think the investment and the international links that we are building in the city and the investment that's coming into the city will be just a few of the topics that will be discussed on the day.
Right, great. So key issues there, key topics that businesses and people running businesses or social enterprises, these topics are going to affect you if you're running a business in the region. But as you say, Sam, it's going to be topical as well. You're going to make sure the agenda reflects perhaps what's happened as we go into autumn as well, as some of the issues will have become clearer. Well, they may have become clearer, who knows, in terms of how things like Brexit will affect businesses. But great, it's going to be topical, that's good. So are you open to people who think that they have a potentially valuable perspective as a speaker to contact you and say, oh, I could talk about this?
Absolutely. So we are. If anyone would like to get in contact and talk about something on the day, or possibly even provide a workshop to businesses, if there is room on the agenda, then, yeah, we're open for discussions with any businesses out there. Just contact me or the chamber directly.
Great, super. And whilst we have you in, we've talked about the chamber put out an announcement. Richard Wright, executive director, he's been on this program several times in the past, because HS2 is key. So I think we've covered that. But Tom, head of corporate partnerships and membership, you've had a sterling year, really, haven't you? The chamber seems to have pulled through, but with changes to your membership packages on offer, and from an observational point of view, where I'm sitting, it looks like you're going from strength to strength.
Yeah, and yeah, no, thank you for commenting on that, Jamie. Really, it has been a very interesting year for the chamber. Absolutely. So October 2016 saw the implementation of the new membership structure, and that was one that very much the whole team at the chamber was, you know, really had great involvement within that process, and consulting with members as well throughout this, to make sure really that we've got packages that are business relevant, I think is a term that I would use for this. So it marked a sort of, you know, a disembarkation from the old membership structure, which was based on employee numbers, to now really give businesses that choice. So as part of our consultation process now with businesses, as they look to join the chamber, or perhaps if they're already a member of the chamber, we're saying, well, what services do you want from us? And that very much has changed, you know, the conversational route now that we have with members. And it's very much this new membership structure that's provided the inspiration for Connect Sheffield. So that's the way that now, where we've restructured that membership, anyone that takes the premium partner level of membership is automatically provided with a stand at Connect Sheffield. So that's one of the ways that we've changed and really sort of flipped that membership on its head. Previously, before, based on employee numbers, there was no room for movement. It was just a case of the company size denoted your annual membership fee, and everything was almost a bolt-on service, if you like.
Yeah, so it's a sort of change in philosophy and approach, which I suppose the other thing with membership organisation, and it's more than membership, it's representation and lobbying and support and services and so on. But you get out what you put in, don't you? And, you can get plenty of benefits, and you can get, by being sort of lightly involved, but you can get more and more involved and reap the rewards from doing so.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you've hit it on the head. I mean, I quite often use the analogy of gym membership. You get out what you put in. We provide the range of services that are there in membership, and ultimately it's my job of as head of the membership team and the membership team itself to be in front of our members, to talk to them, to inform them and say, you know, look, this is included in your membership. Please use this.
Yes.
And as soon as they do, they can see the value from any of the membership packages that are there.
Yeah, grand, super duper. Well, it sounds as though Connect Sheffield is going to be a very, very valuable event for the region, for the city region's businesses. That's great. You've got lots of other things going on too. I notice the Sheffield Business Awards are open for entries as well, and other events too.
Yeah, that's right, Jamie. So the Sheffield Business Awards is exactly what it says. It's the Sheffield Business Awards. So it's an award ceremony that recognises businesses' success in all sectors, and that is organised by the Sheffield Chamber of Commerce. Again, that's held at Ponds Forge in December.
Yeah.
A big award ceremony that attracts around 1,000 business delegates on the evening. And just enables businesses, gives businesses a platform to showcase the work that they've done and celebrate the successes that they've had over the last 12 months. So applications are open for the Sheffield Business Awards, and the awards services most sectors that we have across the city. So I would prompt businesses to the awards. It's completely free to apply, and there's some real benefits from even just being shortlisted, not just winning an award, in terms of profile raising, marketing and credibility for your business. So I would definitely tempt businesses to apply.
Grand, so recognition there, and a lively programme of other events as well, detailed on the website, which people can find out more about.
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to the Sheffield Chamber of Commerce website, you'll see our full events programme on there. I mean, probably just one more event to draw the listeners' attention to really would be the President's Annual Dinner that's taking place on Thursday the 21st of September. Yeah. So ultimately, we've had an absolutely fantastic year with Darren Pearce, Centre Director of Meadowhall, as our President. And personal thanks go out to Darren for all his involvement within the Chamber over the course of the year. And really, the President's Annual Dinner is a sort of slightly different event. It's there to celebrate Sheffield and recognise all that's good about the city. I would say that's one thing that we're very good at in Sheffield, is remaining modest. And sometimes we need to come out and say, well, actually, you know, look, this is what we have done. This is what we are achieving. And Darren will be hosting that dinner on Thursday, the 21st of September. That's Cutler's Hall. So again, would fully encourage people to take a look at that event and buy a ticket.
And am I right in thinking you've got Harry Gratian of BBC Look North again at that?
Yeah, that's correct. We've got Harry.
Yep. Great stuff. So what a character. Brilliant. Super. So that's going to be an excellent event. Details on that are on the Sheffield Chamber website, scci.org.uk. And you can find out more about joining the Chamber and about the forthcoming Connect Sheffield event there as well. So brilliant. Well, time flies. We're going to have to get you both back on the programme again soon. But Tom, Sam, thanks ever so much for coming in today.
Thanks, Jamie.
Yeah, personal thanks, Jamie.
Thank you. So this is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. Tom Sutton and Sam Christmas have been in the studio with me talking about the Chamber, the forthcoming event, Connect Sheffield, sounds great, and much, much more. Now, it's Tramlines this weekend. That made me think, professional musician. What's it like to be a professional musician? Well, I caught up with a professional musician, Alison Smith. She was in Sheffield last week to give a concert. Now, full disclosure, I've known Alison for about 20 years because she used to perform in a duo with my wife, a professional musician also. But Alison was here in Sheffield to give a concert, and great to see her. And I took the opportunity to talk with her yesterday and record an interview with Alison about what it means to be a professional musician, how you go about securing work, performing, securing record deals, and teaching as well, because Alison's career encompasses all of that. So we've got a detailed and in-depth interview with Alison, and we'll play that now.
We're open for Business Live.
Good afternoon, Alison, and thanks so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Jamie. Nice to hear from you. It's all been nice and sunny down here today in Devon, so that's been good.
Oh, lovely. Well, nice and sunny today in Sheffield as well. So summer here again. Good. Yeah. Now I've known you for over 20 years. Astonishing, really. And I've always admired you as a musician. You're a fantastic professional, and you've carved out a great career for yourself. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you do? Tell us more about what you do as a professional musician.
Yeah, well, I'm a professional classical guitarist, and with that comes with many different things that you do. And I perform sort of concerts nationwide and sometimes abroad in different concert series for music societies, guitar societies and festivals, sort of including things like the International Guitar Festival of Great Britain. And as well as that, I've also recorded some CDs, and I currently have two albums out. The first one, Requiedos, and the second one Incandescent. And these are now distributed both physically and digitally worldwide. And I've now been taken on, which I'm really excited about, by Willahane Records and become one of their artists. And they're currently distributing both my CDs. And I've got an exciting project in the future with them to be recording a new CD under their label. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. And as well as all of the performing aspect, I also do a variety of teaching, which includes instrumental lessons, workshops and masterclasses, and even direct an adult guitar ensemble up in a village hall in Dartmoor, which is great fun.
Super.
And I'm currently sort of hoping to expand some workshops and possibly start up a guitar festival, and that's something I've always sort of really wanted to do. And the classical guitar is my main instrument, but I also play the piano and violin, and I teach the piano as well as the guitar. And just sort of a brief bit on background, I studied at Trinity College of Music,
yes,
which is now
indeed
called Trinity Lab, and of course that's where I met Claire, your lovely wife.
Yep, that's right.
We've been great friends for all these years, and also performed extensively together as part of the Linterduo, which was violin and guitar, which was really good fun. And then I've gone on to actually teach at a conservatoire myself, which was the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama, which has now been renamed as well the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland, before moving back down to Devon, which was my original home place.
Yes, I see. Great. So what an exciting portfolio there you talk about in terms of teaching work and performance work and your CDs and so on. That's great. I want to ask you a few questions about all the different aspects there that you've discussed. And now I understand that as a professional classical guitarist, you'll often be booked by a guitar society, a music society, a festival, and it's them who've they've asked you to perform. They'll be actively promoting your concerts and doing all the administrative work around that. There might be other occasions where you might put on your own concert and handle the marketing and administration too. So I thought it might be helpful for any professional musicians listening. Any tips that you could give to other musicians about putting on performance events and about how to market them?
Yes. I mean, if you're putting sort of one on yourself, you need to do quite a bit of careful research of the venue you're considering sort of hiring out. Because not only is it a question of sort of checking it has all the facilities you require and it's good acoustics, it's quite handy if it's already known for performances, and particularly for the area of music you're doing, whether that's classical or folk or jazz. If it's a well-known venue already putting on concerts of your kind of music, people, there's going to be regular audiences already going to that venue, so it's always very beneficial that for advertising purposes. There'll be people going in and out, and you can put your advertising flyers and whatever, and you've instantly got almost a partial sort of ready-made audience. And also, just sort of simple things, really, just sort of checking the overall sort of general area, what's going on, if it's quite an artistic area. Sometimes you'll have a local what's on sort of, I don't know, paper or magazine, and that can always be very useful. But also you need to work backwards and check the date cutoff for if you're putting any advert or entering anything into that, because there's nothing worse if you've got sort of all these wonderful things you can advertise to thousands of people and you miss the cutoff, and then, you know, that's really easy advertising. So sort of simple things like that. So you just have to be very careful not to miss a good sort of advertising opportunity. And then it's sort of basically looking for local press in the area and websites, because obviously a lot's done on sort of websites, social media. There might be music clubs, groups and different activity groups that you can sort of send emails or social media sort of things to in that area.
So, yes. Great. So a good range of tips there for communicating to potential audiences about events
That's great. And you yourself were here in Sheffield last week for a concert. I went along.
Yeah.
It was great. did you enjoy being in Sheffield?
Oh, yeah, no, I had a great time in Sheffield. I always find the people are really, really friendly up in Sheffield and very appreciative. And it was a lovely, friendly sort of audience and had some nice positive feedback. It's always nice if you're asked to do an encore, you know they've enjoyed it.
Indeed.
And sold quite a few CDs, so that was very positive. And what was really lovely, actually, was some people were coming up and asking questions about guitar and technique and being able to talk about it, and they were so enthusiastic about learning the guitar themselves. And it's really rewarding if you've been able to play and an audience interact in that way at the end and you feel that, you know, they go off sort of saying, yeah, I really want to try doing that. So you feel that you sort of, you sort of help them in that sense. So that's really rewarding.
Excellent. That's great. Super. And you talked about music teaching at the start of the interview, and that's a key part of your business. And just remind us again, who are you teaching? You're talking about you teach in a variety of different contexts.
Yes. I'm teaching sort of all levels from the beginner right up to diploma level and ages as well, sort of anything really from age 6 to retired adults. So it's quite a big variety of both, you know, in terms of your styles of teaching, obviously from a 6-year-old to an adult are going to be varied. And within that, I've taught in various different places. I've taught, as I said earlier, at Conservatoire, the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland as a guitar tutor, chamber music coach, and I lectured on the techniques of teaching. And now I'm a classical guitar tutor for the Plymouth University music degree course. But as well as that teaching, I teach as a peripatetic teacher in a few schools, which includes both primary and secondary, and then also privately, which again is sort of quite wide ranging. And I enjoy the variety of the different ages, and it's very nice to actually teach some adults as well as the children, and it's nice having that, having to be on top of doing different teaching styles to encompass that.
Yes, that's great. The variety must be great fun. Sounds like you do really enjoy that. How have you built up such an interesting portfolio of teaching work? What are the secrets of your success?
Well, it's, I was always interested in developing all-round musicians. And when I was sort of teaching, when I first sort of graduated in London, I was very actively involved in the Colour String Music Centres, which sort of involved really developing ear training and general musicianship. And it was a fantastic method, which really encourages that all-round musicianship. And then I sort of found, from having been really actively involved in that, when I was moving out of London and finding work in other areas, people were always really interested to hear about this approach and using the Kadai method. So I found that the background in that had always, you know, served me really well. And I always love teaching anyone who wants to learn, you know, because that's the thing key. If they're really, really interested and you can inspire them, it doesn't matter their ability or age, but it's having that real want to learn. And I think as a performer, if you're performing as well as teaching, you attract different people as well. So I've attracted some of the higher level teaching privately too. If people have heard of you being a performer, they'll then contact and travel a bit further to come for a lesson. So I've been very lucky in that way.
Yes.
And a lot of it's sort of being proactive with it as well. If you tend to find a lot of work is word of mouth. So if you start off with a few pupils and they really enjoy the lessons, they'll then recommend to their friends and so on. And then before you know it, there's quite a network ends up coming. And basically, you know, sort of things
yes.
just sort of go on. And including the schoolwork, if you start teaching in a school and they like your teaching, a music teacher might know a teacher from another school and they're losing a teacher and they say, oh, can you recommend? So a lot of it in the music world, once you get going. A lot of it does come through recommendation as well.
Yes, understood. And that recommendation and referral and people saying, well, I know a really good teacher, must be very, very powerful. Do you do anything to actively encourage people to refer you and recommend you? Do you sort of ask them to do that? I mean, in some businesses, people come on the radio show and talk to me about how they have a process to encourage referrals or recommendations. Do you have anything formal that you do? Do you ask people to do that, or does it simply happen?
I mean, it depends where you are in terms of your teaching. If sort of everything's sort of actively, you know, up and sort of running along, sometimes you've got, you know, you've not got space to take more on, so you wouldn't be proactive in that. You're just, when people come in and ask if you've got space, then continue. But obviously, as in any business and situation, you know, numbers can fluctuate, people can move away, people grow up and move away, and all sorts. So you do, you know, sometimes you do then have to be more proactive, which, you know, can be contacting schools directly to see if there's any vacancies, or writing them a letter and saying if there's not a vacancy, do they have classical guitar department? Would they be interested in starting one? I mean, I did that when I first moved back to Devon. There was one school that did a lot of music that I approached, and they didn't have a classical guitar teacher, and the head of music loved the instrument and said, oh, would you be interested in trying to start something up? So I came in and did a demo at the school. We got quite a few children interested and started it. And then suddenly, you know, it was thriving, and we did a guitar ensemble and we got it really up and running. So there is quite a lot of where you can be proactive yourself in that instance.
Yes, great.
So and once you build up a few contacts, if you are then in need of any more work at any one point, you can always then refer back to your contacts and say, oh, I'm currently, you know, could do with an extra half day teaching or day's work. If you hear of anything coming in, I'm actually looking. So you could do that if that, you know, situation ever did arise.
Yes.
And sometimes things do sort of knock on. I mean, when I first moved back, was performing and things, someone at the university asked me to come in and actually play and talk about the guitar on a sort of project thing they were doing. And then a few years later, when they actually established doing a music degree, they then approached me to ask if I would be a guitar classical guitar tutor for the music degree course in the performance section. So from them having seen me perform and then asked to come in to do a few things at the university, then that sort of snowballed onto them being approached for when they actually established their music degree. So work can come in that sort of angle as well.
Yes, excellent. That sounds really effective. That sounds good. Super. And I had a question that occurred to me, and I'm sorry if you think it's a really silly question, but at a time when lots of industries, lots of professions even, are being disrupted, if you like, by technology, I wondered whether music teaching is going to be disruptive. And, you know, we've seen things like YouTube music lessons, courses of music lessons on YouTube. There's a well-known guitar one. It's acoustic, not classical, but the person does it, offers free music lessons, but then sells resources, books and books of tab music around that. Seems to work for him. Other musicians do things like Skype music lessons. Now, music teachers are using innovative digital technology. Do you think innovations like Skype or music or YouTube music lessons, do you think they'll be positive or negative for teachers like yourself?
And I have sort of mixed views on it. There's pros and against for both, but I think overall, and this is just my opinion, but, you know, but I think there's nothing better than actually face-to-face.
Yes.
Lesson where you get that proper engage, you can engage really fully with it's always quite difficult if you're just sort of doing it sort of electronically. It's actually very nice to have that proper engagement. and much easier to see if you're sort of analysing someone's playing their technique. You can even move around to see them at different angles to work out whether something's going wrong with their thumb position and different things. But if you're just having it, say, a Skype lesson, you're only seeing it from where the camera's angled, so it's a bit slow, and being able to, I think it's better actually being there physically in person. And also, if you wanted to then play along with them and demo, you can look at them and have the eye contact to come in together with. It's actually much harder if you're just doing it across a screen. And also, if you wanted, if they weren't getting something technically and you just needed to just move their arm slightly into the position, you can be explaining for hours, no, a bit more to the right, you know, on the screen.
Yes.
Whereas if you can just help them there and then, it's instant. So there's that kind of thing. But on the other side of it, is it does open up some exciting opportunities for teachers as they're doing Skype lessons. If they're, say they're a well-known performer and some people would like a lesson, but they can't travel hundreds of miles across, or someone abroad particularly loves a particular guitarist that's interested to have a lesson on a particular technique, it does open up opportunities both for the student and for the teacher, you know, so they've got a few exciting extra opportunities rather than just the people, you know, that live nearby. But I would sort of err more on the caution that that's good for sort of extra lessons or occasional lessons rather than just rely, you know, I think the one to the sort of face-to-face is better. But then as the other side of the coin too is if someone was living very remotely, then at least it gives them a wonderful access to still be able to have that lesson. So there is a positive in that respect. The only problem I would say with the YouTube, and again, there's pluses and negatives. It's fantastic. There's so much out there that people can see and learn from and read up on and watch. But the only downside I would say is from just watching a YouTube thing and hearing the instruction, there's nobody actually watching or checking that they're doing it correctly, so people can get into bad habits. Because even if the tuition is fantastic, the teacher's not actually, unless they're having a Skype lesson. So I think Skype's better than actually the YouTube, because then they can have the interaction where the teacher can check if they're doing it correctly or not. And I have known people that have self-taught on YouTube for quite a while and then maybe come for a lesson and then they've had to spend time, they've been struggling with something or ended up nearly, you know, injuring a hand or something because they've been having, you know, doing something not in the right way because they've misunderstood it. And if a teacher had been there in person, they'd have been able to instantly correct them. So that's my only sort of...
Understood.
And of course, the worry, I suppose, for instrumental teachers is if everybody just started going, oh, well, instead of paying for a lesson, I'll just watch the YouTube. So it's difficult to know how, it's like all these things, I suppose, it's a balance, isn't it? But it could be quite a scary prospect, I suppose, for all teaching of anything, isn't it, if everyone just does that. But I think deep down you do still need that sort of proper teaching as well, you know, where they can actually watch you. And so I think the Skype is that's better in that respect, because
yes,
they can actually have that proper interaction.
Understood. So it can be complimentary, but also treat with caution too. So interesting. That's great. That's really helpful.
And I think you can expand, you know, if people are having lessons but they're reading up on, you know, it is useful to watch the odd YouTube sort of instruction on something, and they can sort of gain extra resources, but as an extra thing, I think, rather than totally relying.
Understood. Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, I wondered actually what advice you might give yourself to a musician who wants to build their own teaching career, their own profession, or I can put it that way, or I could put, it's essentially the same question, but I could say, what do you know now about teaching that you wished you'd known when you started out?
Yeah. I think probably the main bit of advice I'd give, and I'm not meaning this in a negative way, I'm meaning it as a positive thing so that you don't fall into, you know, a difficult situation, is from having sort of done it for many years. It's so important, whether you're teaching in a school or privately, to really make sure you've got a proper contract in place. Because sometimes you can teach in a school and they'll say, oh, yes, this will happen, that will happen, and then if there's a problem with a parent paying or something, you don't always get the backing. So it's actually very important to establish, if you're going for an interview at a school, to make sure you know whether the school are going to be dealing with all the financial aspect and they pay you directly, in which case, you know, you've got no worry with anything. But if they make you invoice the parents directly, it's very important to get that money in advance and not do any lessons really until you do, because we like to think, you know, that everyone's 100% sort of honest and trustworthy, but I've known plenty of people, myself included, who've sort of given people the benefit of the doubt, thinking, yes, they'll bring it next week, and then suddenly a whole term's gone, and then they don't, you know, you don't actually ever see them the money, so you can end up losing lots of money. So it's very important, whilst it might seem, you know, a little bit sort of harder at the start, it's actually very important to be very businesslike at the start and sort of just say, these are the terms, and this is how I operate. And I've often found that if you treat it very businesslike, that you're less likely to be messed around. And also the same privately, if you just make it clear what your terms are at the start, what you want for your own individual business, and then just make that clear at the start, and if necessary, just say, you know, I sign that I understand, you know, when I'm taking lessons with you, I agree to the following, then it saves any sort of awkwardness further down the line where you can just produce, well, you know, you knew these were the rules when you started. It's always a very difficult thing because musicians generally are very, you know, very friendly, approachable people, and we don't like to be sort of all hard-edged, this is this and that, the other, but so many of us can end up getting very stressed or losing money if it's not done in that way. So it has to be sort of treated as a business. Whilst you're still friendly, you just make it clear, oh, this is how I operate. And I think that's the main sort of bit of advice, because I've seen it happen to so many people.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So act in a business-like, professional manner and set out terms of engagement, terms the way you expect to be treated. You are a professional, it's a horrible thing to be burnt by giving someone the benefit of the doubt. So you've seen it, you've had it happen, and you've seen it happen to other people. But this way you can avoid that. That's really helpful. Yeah. Thanks. And I'm going to ask you a final question, Alison, if I may, because we've also talked about your performance career too. And I wanted, you've given some great advice earlier on, but I just wanted to sort of wrap up with the performance side. And let's see again what advice you'd give to someone wanting to build a career for all or some of their living from performing music live and from selling CDs. So whether you want to give advice that's relating to performance, to securing an appropriate record deal or whatever, but performance and CD related advice, what do you know now that you wish you'd known, or what advice can you give?
I mean, I think the biggest sort of advice I would do is that you've really got to be very proactive all the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how good you are or how much practice you do, that concerts are not just going to come, you know, through your door. You're not just going to be rung up like that. I mean, as you become more well-known, you might be approached. But certainly when you're first starting out, and, I mean, even agents of the very top people are constantly plugging away, but the biggest thing you have to do is to just keep at it and not give up, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because the problem is there's so many musicians out there, and the sort of ratio to the amount of concerts that are available at each music society is very, very small compared to the volume of musicians that effectively would be applying for these concerts. And so, you know, you can write off or email, you know, loads of people. And when you first start, you're expecting, you know, a positive thing from each email, you know, and it doesn't happen like that. You have to plug away, and then eventually one will come through, and then that will lead on to another, and it builds, and it does. But the biggest thing is to not give up at it and realise that it's not because, you know, sometimes there's not even a vacancy for a concert somewhere. So you basically have to just sort of look around at any performance opportunity and really just keep going for it. And also to try and get experience as well. I mean, it's always good when you first start in some of the lunchtime concert series that they offer sort of young graduates to a chance for performance exposure. They're always good to do to, and then invite people to those concerts that, you know, that might be from a music society to hear you play. So then you might get a booking from that. So they're always useful to do. But one sort of air of caution I would say is just be careful not to then end up accepting and doing everything for free, because otherwise all your work will be more of that, because then you'll be asked to do more and more free things. So it's getting a balance really whilst with that. And again, if you're whatever concerts you're doing at any point in your career, it's always making the most of every single gig really. So if you're playing somewhere, just sort of survey that area. Are there any more festivals, societies, anything going on in that area that you could approach to invite them to your concert? Because then if they come to your concert and they like you, they're much more likely to consider you for something if they've met you face to face. And and sometimes the actual personal approach as well, so rather than just emailing everybody, which I know so many people do these days, but people do actually like a bit of personal approach as well, actually making a few phone calls, following things up, so that they've got that interaction, because they're going to be having thousands of emails every day from everyone. So you've got to try and engage a bit more to stand out, so you can be, particularly if they haven't heard of you before.
Yes.
So it is basically lots of, and trying different angles with it. And I mean, in terms of the selling the CDs, if you haven't sort of got a direct contract or anything at the start, it is very, very beneficial once you've done a CD to then approach different distributors, because there's certain record labels you can approach to come under them and then have a contract with them. But as well as that, there are separate distributors that will distribute you as an independent artist as well. But obviously you have to, again, sort of really try. It might not be instant, and you might find someone that's representing your kind of music, but it's very essential really if you're wanting your CDs sold sort of around in shops or on Amazon or appearing on iTunes and such things, because doing it independently without a distributor, it's very, very hard to get into any of those things. Whereas if you have either a distributor representing you, they'll be representing you within their catalogue, or a record label will be doing the same.
Yes.
And you'll then secure the contracts with those people. Otherwise, it's a case really of selling them. You tend to sell quite a lot, the physical CDs at concerts as well. But if someone was wanting to go beyond that, it's actually quite difficult approaching a shop independently. It's better to go through the distributor. So that's what I would suggest with that.
Right.
And you can research. There's loads of range. You can sort of research that. And
Excellent. Well, that's really helpful advice, I think, for people making careers themselves as professional musicians. And I'm sure that would be very, very valuable and valued. Thank you so much, Alison. And people, of course, can, people can find out more about you and can hear some of your playing through your website, where you have some music that people can access there, and as well as people can get hold of your albums from your website. Do you want to give out the website address, Alison?
Yes, it's www.alisonsmithguitar.com, and that's spelt just Alison with one L, and the Smith the normal way with an I.
Excellent. So alisonsmithguitar.com is the website, and that's been fascinating. Great to speak with you, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today, Alison. Really appreciate
it. That's okay. It's a pleasure.
We're open for business life.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. And whether you're starting or running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer or employee, we're always keen to hear from you. You can get involved. You can put yourself forward to be on the show, or you can comment on something that we have been discussing or on something that's going on in business and social enterprise and that is going to affect you. It's really easy to get in touch. Email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, send a text to 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And in the programme today, we've heard from Sam Christmas and Tom Sutton of the Sheffield Chamber. They were in the studio earlier talking about Connect Sheffield, which is going to be the largest business conference and exhibition in the city this calendar year. It's going to host businesses exhibiting and have cutting edge topics for discussion from high profile business leaders and speakers. That's taking place in October, Wednesday the 18th of October to be exact, at Ponds Ford. And Sam discussed that. Tom also talked about the chamber and the year that they've had going from strength to strength. Other chamber events too, including the President's Dinner and the Sheffield Business Awards. Now, if you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, don't panic. You can catch up by catching the podcast of today's programme. It'll be on the Sheffield Live website, sheffieldlive.org. Go to radio shows, look up Business Live, and it will be there from around 11 a.m. We've also heard in the show today from Alison Smith. She's a professional musician, someone I've known for 20 years myself, and she has made a career both as a performer and recording CDs and giving concerts and as a music teacher. Now, if that's something that you're interested in doing, making a career in music, then there are plenty of tips there from Alison. Really interesting interview as well. On the theme of music, it's Tramlines this weekend. Enjoy it. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be warm and sunny. I know it. I'm optimistic. Sheffield Live are going to be broadcasting from Tramlines this weekend. The station will be at the Folk Forest. So come along and say hello to Sheffield Live presenters and listen live from 1 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday for live broadcasts. That's it, but don't go away because we're back next week. But next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, from 10 a.m. all the way through to noon today. So stay tuned for that. And we shall play out with a little bit of music from guitarist Alison Smith.
We're open for Business Live.